Hey, good afternoon. My name is Meade Treadwell. I'm Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and under state law, when an initiative goes forward to the voters, the Lieutenant Governor is asked to hold two hearings on each ballot measure in each of the state's four judicial districts. So we're honored to be here in Barrow today. I'd like to thank the hosts at the Inupiat Heritage Center. We've got about half a dozen people here in the room and many more online and others who have told us that they're going to be showing up. So I think we'll have a good hearing today. The agenda for the hearing is fairly simple. I will give a ballot summary or a summary on the ballot measure, as well as talk about the cost estimate. And then I will invite the proponent and the opponent of the measure, who we've identified, to speak each for about 10 minutes. And then we'll invite public testimony. And the main thing I would like to say in the tone of this hearing is that we are right now writing legislation. The legislation has been written, but we're considering the effect of this legislation and the intent of the proposers and how this legislation might be carried into law. And toward that end, we have a number of people online who represent state agencies, and I'll ask them to identify themselves in a moment, who can explain how the state agencies would carry out this law if asked questions. And so it's your opportunity as citizens to ask these kind of questions, and we'll go from there. Let me ask just very quickly, who's on from state agencies so that I would know to call on you?
This is Brandon Spanos, the Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue Tax Division.
Diane Casto with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Jeannie Mungle with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
April Wilkerson with Department of Corrections.
Michaela Fowler, the Department of Commerce.
Major Dennis Kessler with the Alaska State Troopers.
Lorinda Lotko with Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Food Safety and Sanitation Program.
Any others? Major, could you give me your last name again?
Casanovas.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay, most of you were at the last hearing, which we held in Nome, and thank you all for joining us. Let me say that what we have here in Barrow is a short slideshow, which I will I'll go through. The slideshow ultimately will be available on the Alaska Online Public Notice System, we apologize for the fact that it's not up now, but we're working on that. This is a public hearing on ballot measure 2, which is titled An Act to Tax and Regulate the Production, Sale, and Use of Marijuana. And I mentioned that our agenda starts out with a sectional analysis and cost estimate of the bill. And presentations by the pro and con side and public testimony. To summarize the proposed bill before we get into each of its sections, the bill would tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. It would make use of marijuana legal for persons 21 or older, allowing them to possess, use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, public use, and operation of marijuana-related facilities. It would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana and provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. To go to a sectional analysis, the section one adds a new chapter, Alaska Statute 17.38, Regulation of Marijuana, to the Alaska statutes. The statute would provide that the production and sale of marijuana could be regulated and taxed, such that businesses could sell marijuana and that such sale could be conducted or should be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The marijuana, the statute would limit the use, sale, growth, and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older, and it imposes penalties for public consumption. The statute would allow for the creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 adds a new chapter, Alaska Statutes 43.61, an excise tax on marijuana to the Alaska statutes. And this statute would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility, a producer, to a retail marijuana store, distributor, or a marijuana product manufacturing facility. The producer would be responsible for paying the tax. Monthly tax statements would be required by the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility. If these taxes were not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under AS 43.05.220. Now, those are the two major sections of the bill. What happens with a citizen initiative if a majority of the votes favor adoption? If we Alaskans vote to make this measure law on the November ballot, I'll certify the election return as so, and then an initiated law becomes law effective 90 days after certification. That law, unlike other laws, is not subject to the veto of the governor, and it may not be repealed by the legislature for at least 2 years of its effective date, and that's under Alaska's Constitution, Article 11. And although the legislature may amend an initiative at any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years may not operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or vitiate the intent. And that's been something that is argued in court, I would say, almost regularly. We also asked departments in state government. And I should state that this is in state government. It's not in, it doesn't consider cost to local governments, and there may be cost to local governments. But we asked for a cost estimate of the bill from the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue estimates it would need to create at least 3 new positions to oversee the new excise tax with a recurring annual cost of about $300,000. They also estimate that it would need a one-time expense of $500,000 to configure their tax revenue management systems. And so that's a one-time cost range of $350,000 to $500,000. So for the first year, our Department of Revenue expects that this law would cost between $650,000 and $800,000. Our Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development notes that if the initiative passes, the responsibility for controlling marijuana will lie with the ABC board until or unless a marijuana control board is established by the legislature within DCCED. And as it was done with Colorado, the department recommends the creation of a task force to identify legal policy and procedural issues that need to be resolved. And from creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is $1,563,960 for the first year, and $1.413,140 for the second year, leaving a $1.5 million cost estimate at the Department of Commerce for the first year. We also got cost estimates from other departments, including the Department of Health and Social Services, which estimated for a number of reasons that their cost could be as little as zero and as high as about $2.9 million. The Department of Public Safety that estimated an additional cost of $1.4 million. The Department of Environmental Conservation, which oversees food safety, and because this law would allow marijuana to be included in food products, an estimate of zero to $136,900. And the University of Alaska, which has several possible effects of this bill, not only in counseling students and so forth, but in potential losses of federal funds, came up with an indeterminate estimate, but said that it would be a cost, could be a cost to them. So just going back to our agenda now, you've heard the sectional analysis and the cost estimate of the bill. We will hear from the proponent and the opponent of the bill. And I will tell you that this cost estimate, which probably is one of the best summaries of how agencies look to see how this bill would be implemented, is on the table at the back of the room, and I would urge you to read it. Agencies spent a lot of time working on this. With that, now I'd like to invite Dr. Tim Hinterberger. Tim, I'm going to ask you to identify the name of your organization, and I know that you personally are a sponsor of this legislation, and it's 1210 now, about 1212, and I'll give you 10 minutes to present this, and I'd like to, just as he comes into the room, welcome Mayor Bob Haracek of Barrow to our hearing. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, for being here. Tim, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Tim Hinterberger. I'm a professor and medical educator at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. I serve as volunteer chair for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Before we get into the initiative itself, I want to take a moment to introduce you to our campaign committee. So since I can't control the PowerPoint directly, if you could forward it to the slide that says campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol and has photos of a number of us on there. Mine is the second one from the top, second from the left on the top. The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol is a grassroots organization made up of hundreds of volunteers across the state, many of whom have been involved with this issue for many years. Next slide. The initiative is on the ballot because over 45,000 Alaskans signed the qualifying petition. We had signature gatherers all over the state, both urban and rural Alaska, and the response was overwhelmingly positive. Next slide, initiative framework. So slide six. Ballot Measure 2 offers Alaskans the opportunity to enact a more sensible approach to marijuana. We all know that marijuana is already here. We have the highest use rate in the country, with over 100,000 Alaskans currently using marijuana. So the question you will be deciding in November is not whether marijuana should be in the state, but rather how the existing industry should be managed. Ballot Measure 2 sets up a framework, and after it passes, a 9-month rulemaking period will begin. During that rulemaking period, most forms of advertising will be banned. So-called child-friendly edibles will be banned, and other strict regulations will be enacted to ensure that the sale of marijuana is highly controlled. Next slide, rulemaking. The initiative actually requires that these steps are taken. Next slide, where it says section 1738090. Regulations will be enacted to ensure that marijuana is not sold to minors. This means strict rules such as the banning of child-friendly edibles like gummy bears and lollipops. Next slide. Labeling requirements will ensure quality control so consumers know what they are getting. Next slide. Strict restrictions on advertising can and will be put into place. Anyone who tells you otherwise either has not read the initiative or is trying to mislead you. Next slide. Finally, local control. The initiative provides communities with the greatest level of local control allowed by state law. It would be unconstitutional to allow communities to ban the possession of marijuana, but the initiative gives Barrow, Anchorage, and any other local government in Alaska the opportunity to ban the purchase and sale of marijuana. Those communities who decide to exercise their local option will have a situation fundamentally no different than what we have today. Next slide, marijuana versus alcohol. When considering whether marijuana should be taxed and regulated like alcohol, it is important to recognize that marijuana is safer than alcohol by any objective standard. Next slide. This is a position that I hold as a scientist and a medical educator, but the fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol, both to the individual and to society, is supported by all scientific research, and polls show that nearly 75% of Americans agree. Next slide. marijuana versus alcohol. If we recognize that marijuana is far less harmful than alcohol, then there is no reason why we cannot or should not regulate it in a similar way. Marijuana is less toxic by any measure, as its long-term use is not associated with the many serious chronic medical conditions that affect alcohol users. Next slide. And unlike alcohol, marijuana does not lead to overdose deaths. It does not contribute to violence, sexual assault, and domestic abuse, or fights and injuries. Next slide, slide 16, if you can see the slide numbers. Again, this is something that the overwhelming majority of voters in the state and this country recognize. Only somewhere between 10 and 15% of people believe that marijuana is more harmful than alcohol, which is about the same number of people that believe in the existence of Bigfoot. Next slide, 17, initiative benefits. So in considering the benefits of passing ballot measure 2, one of the first and most obvious benefits is that legalizing marijuana could actually lead to a decrease in drinking alcohol. Next slide. Reduce alcohol consumption, protect teens, revenue for the state. That's the slide we're looking at. We know that the health costs associated with consuming alcohol are 8 times greater than for marijuana, and the health costs associated with tobacco consumption are 40 times greater than for marijuana. So the extent to which marijuana can serve as a substitute for those substances is a huge public health benefit for Alaska. Next slide, slide 20. One of the most important benefits of taxation and regulation, counter to what you are going to hear from the opposition, is that it will actually make it harder for teens to access marijuana. Again, remember, marijuana is already here in Alaska, and it is currently far easier for teens to obtain marijuana than to obtain alcohol or tobacco. So by regulating it, we will require that sales are conducted by responsible businesses who require proof of ID, and they'll have an incentive to make sure they are not selling to minors. Next slide, protecting teens. What we have seen in Colorado, which voted to tax and regulate marijuana in 2012, is that teen use has actually decreased, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health, whose data you're seeing here. So when you hear the opposition group tell you that teen use will increase after this initiative passes in Alaska, please know that the facts do not back up those claims. Next slide, tax revenue. Along with the reduction in alcohol consumption and teen use, we also know that taxing and regulating marijuana will create new revenue for the state. Colorado and Washington expect to collect hundreds of millions of tax revenues over the next few years. This money in Alaska is currently going to criminals in the underground market when it should be spent on important public needs such as infrastructure, education, drug awareness, and prevention. How am I doing on time?
Just hit 7 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Slide, cost savings. Additionally, we know that the state is spending between $8 million and $14 million per year enforcing marijuana possession laws, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. Whatever it costs to implement the law and the regulatory structure will be more than covered by the money we will save, no longer having to enforce the failed policies of prohibition. Next slide, jobs for Alaskans. Just as importantly, taxing and regulating marijuana will create jobs for Alaskans. Colorado's marijuana industry currently supports approximately, well, actually well over 10,000 jobs by latest counts. Slide 25, public safety. From this perspective, most Alaskans recognize that our law enforcement officials should be focusing on fighting violent crime, not arresting adults in this state for simply using a substance that is far safer than alcohol. As we see in this quote from former Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, the threat of state prosecution for simple marijuana possession is real and substantial. Next slide, 26. According to statistics from the ACLU, an Alaskan is arrested pretty often simply for having marijuana. And next slide. Of all drug arrests in Alaska, 81% are for marijuana possession, which is the highest rate in the country. New data just came out this week from the UAA Justice Center that may slightly alter this number, but it's still pretty close. So we are criminalizing otherwise law-abiding citizens, wasting precious law enforcement resources, which could be spent much more productively. Next slide, slide 28. Safe medical access. Passing ballot measure 2 will increase access to medical marijuana for patients who really need it, as reported in this story by KTUU Channel 2. Medical marijuana is technically legal in Alaska, but there is no way for many patients to access their medicine safely. We hear stories every day from people who have been prescribed marijuana for various illnesses, but have to go to the black market to obtain it. Next slide says, prohibitionists. In closing, I want to remind you a bit of the history of how we got where we are today. People ask me all the time, why should marijuana be made legal? And I ask them, consider, why is marijuana illegal in the first place? Is it because there was an epidemic of crime caused by marijuana 80 years ago that needed to be addressed? No, the fact is that marijuana is illegal today because of lies and racism. Next slide, prohibitionists, with the photo of Harry Anslinger, the first drug czar in this country. Marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. In 1937, when marijuana was first made illegal, it was done so primarily due to this kind of ignorance. Next slide. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. Again, marijuana was made illegal for reasons that had nothing to do with any objective truth, and we know a lot better today. At 32, you smoke a joint and you're likely to kill your brother. Well, again, you know, people laugh at this stuff today, but honestly, this is the only reason why marijuana is illegal. Prohibitionists in modern times, such as current DEA Chief Michelle Lanhardt in Washington, D.C., hold the position that marijuana is equally as harmful as heroin, methamphetamine, and other drugs. This is simply indefensible and scientifically unsupportable. This line of thinking and telling untrue statements about marijuana and its effects continues today. We see it in the arguments that you will be hearing from the opposition, and as in the last two slides, so here, Alaska Commons, and the next one, Reefer Madness Comes to Alaska. Our opponents have already been taken to task by the press for their misinterpretation of the science. So, in closing, I hope that you will stand with me and thousands of other Alaskans in November by voting yes on ballot measure 2. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much. And your presentation went 12 minutes, which I can offer to Christina Wolston next on the opposition side. Christina, thanks for being with us. We are putting up your slideshow right now. And I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and your organization.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor and everyone in Barrow and across the state on the conference call today. My name is Christina Wolfson. I'm the volunteer spokesperson for Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2. I'm originally from the village of Naknek in southwest Alaska. I'm an Alaska Native shareholder. I work for an Alaska Native Corporation. I am a small business owner and a mom. And I'm here, and if you could move to slide 2, Cameron, if it is indeed Cameron running the slideshow today. I'm here representing tens of thousands of Alaskans who are represented by organizations and businesses like the Alaska Support Business Alliance, or the Alliance, the Alaska Chamber, health organizations like Alaska Regional Hospital, Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, organizations like the Alaska Conference of Mayors and the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, who understand that our nation has struggled and has learned a lot from the mistakes of legalizing marijuana in the past. And we need to look at modern science, we need to look at modern research, and to really address whether this is the right thing for Alaska, knowing what we know about the health, the social, the economic impacts this undoubtedly will have, and what we can see from Colorado. When you look at the fine print of what, I'm sorry, go to slide 3. When you look at what's in the fine print, and Mr. Hinderberger said that all of these things can be changed in the ballot measure. But the fact is, when you look at the fine print of what is marijuana defined in the ballot measure, it is every compound, manufacture, salt, derivative, mixture, including marijuana concentrates, accessories, anything that you need to introduce marijuana into the human body. And it further goes to define marijuana products. Means concentrated marijuana products and marijuana products that are comprised of marijuana and other ingredients and are intended for us use or consumption, such as but not limited to edible products, ointments, and tinctures. And this is important because this is all language that was included in Colorado, but much more extreme. And the proponents of this ballot measure know that you really can't change anything in a ballot measure without it being considered substantive change, without it being considered a repeal, and the state of Alaska would be opened up to legal action by outside interests who are funding this and looking to make a lot of money off of Alaska. And when you consider, go to slide four, what are the products that are included in marijuana concentrates? This is a picture of marijuana concentrates, things like butane hash oil and shatter and butter, things that are 80 to 90% THC, and these would be completely legal in the state of Alaska if this ballot measure were to pass. We're not talking about Woodstock weed. We're not talking about a green leafy plant. We are talking about a very different commercialized industry. If you go to slide five, it talks about making butane hash oil concentrates. This is a toxic chemical. It's mixed with butane, so they take massive amounts of marijuana and they saturate it with butane fuel, extract the resin, resaturate with grain alcohol, and then they cook it off. And this is nearly purely THC. And this is what are used in many of the edibles that we would see in Alaska. If you go to slide six, one of the trends in this industry is to make things easier to secretly use marijuana. And this is a slide that shows the title, Students Find Ways to Secretly Smoke Marijuana in Class. Vape pens have been revealed to double in use in 1 year to nearly 2 million in 2012. The CDC study found that students experimented with vaporizers or vape pens. They had never actually smoked a cigarette. And these are, I think, concerns, and they also make them into highlighters that you can sneak into class and to use. And so the industry is making it a lot easier for our young people to use these in surreptitious ways. If you go to slide seven, this is a picture of the marijuana edibles that would be legal in Alaska. You can't change the ballot measure. These were specifically protected because this is where the industry is going. This is modern marijuana. These are suckers. These are candies. These are ice cream bars, and they are undistinguishable by our kids. The Hershey Company has sued one of the marijuana edible companies, the top one you can see, it's called a Kif Kat, because you can't tell if it's a Hershey product or if it is a marijuana product, and this is what would be in Alaska. Slide eight is a storefront, a pot shop in Colorado. These are the packaging. Kids can see what they are. They're not able to tell if this is a marijuana edible or if it is an actual gummy bear or a jujube that you could otherwise buy in a store. If you go to slide nine, this is the advertising. And I think it is wishful thinking, and I think that there's perhaps some buyer's remorse and some regret in the way that this was worded, because we are stuck with advertising in Alaska, just like they're stuck with it in Colorado and in Washington. They haven't been able to change or to keep out concentrates and edibles that are packaged in ways that are appealing to kids. They haven't been able to keep out advertising, and this would be in Alaska. When you look at slide 10, the bottom left-hand side is a Google Map representation of the pot shops in just Denver alone. They have more pot shops and more liquor, they have more pot shops than liquor stores and pharmacies in Colorado. So when we say this, you know, communities can opt out and this is not really going to come to Alaska, we need to be realistic that this is what would happen to our state. When you look at the messaging, this is a sign that was at the fair, and these were on buses in downtown Anchorage and all over our city, really. And it's a sign that says, beer, liquor, safer, and the safer word is above a pot leaf. And it's telling our kids that this is the safe option. It's telling our community that this is what we should be doing as a society. And it is a wrong message. It is irresponsible. And our kids see it when they are just trying to go to ballet class or to baseball. On slide 12 is a link, is a couple of studies that point to the significant health concerns that we should all have as society, particularly on adolescents and marijuana use. It has found that it can lead up to an 8-point decline in IQ. Marijuana users have abnormal brain structure and poor memory, a Northwestern University study that was conducted just this past December. And I'd like to point out that, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the other slides, this is not your Woodstock weed. We are talking about 10 times more powerful just in the leafy green substance. When you consider the concentrates, it is off the charts potent, and this is not what we were looking at even 10, 20, 30 years ago. If you could go to slide 13. When we look at workplace productivity and the cost to Alaska, there are no appropriate standards and testing available for marijuana. There is no way to ensure workforce safety, readiness, and productivity in Alaska. And Alaska already has the highest compensation costs in the nation. Workers who test positive for marijuana use have 55% more industrial accidents, 85% more injuries, and a 75% increase in absenteeism compared to non-smokers. And this is from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Now, the concern, and if you go to slide 14, and this is a slide that shows us that when you legalize a substance, kids equate legal with safe, and their perception of risk goes down, and their use goes up. This is not conjecture. These are studies. We've learned a lot because we've seen marijuana legalized and then not legalized over the years through our nation. We've learned an awful lot. And there was a study, and I'd like to correct, you know, or add a disclaimer to the study that Mr. Hinderberger had produced. That actually did not include two of the largest school districts in Colorado, so I don't think that we can consider that an accurate representation of students in Colorado who are using marijuana. Colorado actually has been they've been experimenting with marijuana legalization since 2006. And between 2006 and 2008 to 2010 to 2012 even, just in that short period of time when they just legalized medical marijuana, ages 12 to 17-year-olds saw a 25% increase in marijuana use. And so I do think that we need to be realistic, just like the American the New England Journal of Medicine said, legal drugs are the most harmful because they're the most prevalent, they're the most available, and they're most accessible. We cannot consider a drug just by its pharmacological content. It really comes down to what does our society say we should be doing. And if we listen to the Marijuana Policy Project, who is funding this initiative, and to the pro side, our kids should be using marijuana because it's the safe option. When you look at slide 16, and I just mentioned them, the Marijuana Policy Project has added Alaska to its strategic plan. This is a national strategy to bring marijuana everywhere. It is big money, it is commercialized, it is industrial, and it's a retail marijuana industry. And they were the ones that funded the campaign, more than $700,000. And these are all outside of Alaska funds. They do not care what happens in Alaska. And if you go to slide 17, this is exactly what the executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project said. While most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose a statewide legalization vote just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding. They don't care about Alaska. Now, Alaskans have learned more about this ballot measure, and the polls have actually shifted about 18%. And more Alaskans, if we voted today, would vote no on ballot measure 2 because of the concerns and because of what we're seeing out of Colorado. If you go to slide 20, the first myth that I'd like to point out to you is that this will bring in huge tax revenue. The yes side has continued to backpedal on what they think will be revenue for Alaska. This is a generous calculation, about $5.1 million in potential tax revenue to Alaska from the marijuana industry. Colorado, who has seven times the population of Alaska, has seen $12 million in the first 7 months of marijuana sales in their state. So I think that we can perceivably assume that Alaska would receive just a fraction of the tax revenue that was purported by the yes side, and certainly a lot less than what's out of Colorado. Colorado also receives 44% of their revenue from tourists, from people driving to Colorado in the urban areas, and 90% in the rural areas, their tax revenue is based on tourists. So I think that we can safely say that the numbers would be vastly insignificant in Alaska. If you would please forward to slide 23, the second myth is that this would somehow affect the black market in Alaska. I'd like to point out that in Colorado and in Washington, law enforcement officials are saying that the black market is actually thriving, and it is thriving because it's more expensive at the pot shops, and if you can get it cheaper and it's accessible from the corner drug dealer, then you're going to get it from the drug dealer on the corner. Lieutenant Mark Compte with the Colorado Springs Police Vice and Narcotics Unit has said this has done nothing more than enhance the opportunity for the black market. If you can get it tax-free in the corner, you're going to get it on the corner. The DEA, a federal agency that looks at drug interdiction, has seen a fivefold increase in black market marijuana leaving the borders of Colorado. So I think this is a substantial myth that we should all be very skeptical about. Myth number three, slide 24, we can pass on that. Slide 25, we're wasting millions locking up innocent pot smokers. Only 8% of Alaska's prison population is made up of drug offenders, and the vast majority are for drugs other than marijuana. The Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police and other law enforcement agencies have said that we would have no savings in costs to the state of Alaska because, basically, we do not have a marijuana incarceration problem in Alaska. We are not locking up Alaskans for minor possession of marijuana. We are not busting into Alaskans' home. And this is an absolute falsehood that the yes side is scaring Alaskans about. I'd like to, this is kind of the last slide, slide 26. We have a lot that we can learn from Colorado. Colorado is having serious issues, and even their governor has said, just wait, let us, you know, wait to see what happens here. And they're seeing significant challenges there. There's a 25% increase in homelessness in Colorado. They don't have enough jobs for folks that are coming, you know, to smoke pot in Colorado. The deputy director of a shelter in Colorado said, of the new kids we're seeing, the majority are saying they're here because of the weed. They're traveling through, and it's very unfortunate. And they've had a number of young people living on the streets because of the pot industry in Colorado. The other thing I'd like to just point out as a misrepresentation is the distinct and huge numbers of accidents and harm to our society and to the public because of marijuana use. And I'd like to point out to a study done by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, who said that marijuana-related admissions to hospital emergency rooms account for more than all other drugs combined. While we hear repeatedly that marijuana is quote-unquote safe, we desperately need a definition of what entails safety when emergency rooms are burdened with marijuana-related health issues. And I ask you to consider the fact that in Colorado, they've already had two deaths attributed to consuming marijuana edibles, concentrated products that are so substantial and so high that a young man committed suicide and jumped out of a hotel room, and another young man who shot his wife in front of their young children. I think that we have substantial concerns, and we need to look at them, and we as Alaskans should come together for a solution. We should not rely on an outside organization to fund this effort because they don't care about Alaska. Thank you very much.
Tina, yeah, thank you, and you went a little over the time. But appreciate your presentation, and Tim will work to make that up.
My apologies. You can just flag me at any time and tell me I'm going over. I'll start to use a stopwatch.
No problem. Let me move from here now to open the hearing. We have about a dozen people here in Barrow who have come to be here, as well as others on the phone who have indicated an interest in testifying. The first person who's indicating that interest in testifying or asking questions is Sarah Thomas. Sarah, we're going to pull a chair around here where you can be heard on the microphone, and you've got 3 minutes, but you are also, you're very welcome to present questions to either the state agency officials on the call or myself or to the sponsors. But Sarah, you're from Barrow, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you. I'm representing myself, but I also am representing people of my generation. I'm in my 20s. I interact every day with people who are my age and younger. One thing I know for sure is people are not educated enough about marijuana use. I'm a proponent of decriminalizing marijuana because I believe that we deserve to have this issue as a public health issue. When I see friends of mine who have turned to cocaine and heroin because either they had to pass a drug test and it's easier to beat it when they use cocaine, or to heroin because they didn't realize that heroin is not the same as marijuana. We need to get marijuana out of that same category as those other drugs because as it is a gateway drug. It should not be in the same category, in my opinion, at all. When you talk about funding black markets, I didn't hear anything about the international black market. There have been tens of thousands of murders in Mexico in the last, since 2006. When we were talking about black markets, I'm not as concerned with the American markets as the Mexican market. That's a huge issue that that I'd like to see addressed more. That's a big reason that I'd like to see the legalization in the U.S., in Alaska and the U.S. Most importantly, we need to give our youth the truth that they already know. Marijuana is not as detrimental to your health as other drugs. We know this, and we have no faith in our justice system. The war on drugs is a war on people. I'd like to see it turned around. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, do you have any questions for proponents, opponents, or state agency folks on the line?
I don't have any questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next on the list indicating a possible interest in testifying was Aswan Tuvar.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Oh, it's a sign-in sheet, and it was asked whether or not you want to testify, unsure, so you're welcome to come up or not, as the case may be. Okay. The next person also signed, unsure, was Daniel Thomas.
Nope.
Daniel indicated not interest, and then Mayor Harachek. You're very welcome. If I mispronounce your name, Bob, I
was going to say, we've known each other for...
Harachek.
For ages, one of these days.
Yep.
I'm Bob Horchur, Mayor of the City of Barrow. I listened to both pro and con, and basically I'm not going to take either side, or I can pick each one apart, but prefer not to. I agree with Sarah about, I think we ought to decriminalize marijuana. I agree with Sarah about a concern for the cartels in Mexico. In reference to that, I think the way if the initiative passes, the government has 9 months to promulgate regulations. And by promulgating the regulations, they could eliminate a lot of the scare tactics I heard or perceived in the Vote No campaign presentation. On there it said that the Conference of Mayors opposed the initiative. I could not be at that meeting, but I wouldn't have taken sides, but I would not have voted prevent the initiative from being presented to the voters. I have a few questions. I don't really have it, you know, that was about the end of my statement. The questions are, if the state passes the initiative, or if the initiative passes the state, what's going to be, which law is going to be actually enforced, the state laws or the federal laws concerning the possession of marijuana? I've listened to the president, and some of his views of what in reference to California, to Oregon and Colorado. The other question, another question is, in the Raven decision, it authorized 4 ounces of marijuana in possession, whereas this legislation, I believe, says 1 ounce. And there's that contradiction in terms or in designation. In reference to local options, I believe from my reading of this that we could have local option to ban the sale and distribution in this community, but we cannot ban the possession or usage. It's the distribution and sale if it be banned. But in reference to that also, I'm thinking, you know, the city of Barrow is in real financial straits because of declining revenue sources, including state revenue sharing. I had to put that dig in. Would it be possible, you know, depending on the vote and depending on the community, that since we have a alcohol distribution center, that the city of Barrow could be the marijuana distribution center? I gotta shut this off. Sorry about that. And would there be public input? The last question, I guess, would be, would there be public input in that, in the promulgation of the regulations? Now, I agree with the dangers of some of the derivatives of marijuana, and I'd like to see them addressed in the regulations. Smoking marijuana in some forms of food, like brownies, I could see that. But I would have opposition to, you know, some of the more concentrates. The other question is, I'd like to see addressed is how you, well, it could be addressed in the promulgation of these regulations. It would be in the advertising, prevention of products that could be even conceivably perceived by kids as being a drug, marijuana. And that's it.
Thank you. I've noted 3, 6, maybe 7 or 8 questions there, and what I'm first going to do is ask the proponent and opponent to see if they'd like to address any of your questions, and then we'll turn to state agencies.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Tim, would you like to take on any of those questions?
Sure. Maybe you can help me run down the list. I remember the first one, I think, was about federal enforcement.
State law or federal law on possession.
Yeah. The Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., not too long ago, announced that they had no intention to prosecute individuals who were using marijuana in states where there were well-regulated policies for legal purchase. What was the next question? About whether...
Tim,
Let me just try to break these questions up one by one. So on state law or federal law on possession, you're saying that the federal government has said that they won't enforce. Christina, do you have any comment on that?
Sure, yes, thank you very much. The White House has said that, you know, nothing in their mind has changed, that marijuana is still both dangerous and illegal. The DEA, a federal agency, is in Colorado actively trying to engage in ways to keep the public safe with increased black market. And actually, they have a number of the Mexican cartels that are there. And so the federal government is actively engaged in states where marijuana is legal because of the increased use, because of the increased export and the increased black market activity. And so they're really concentrating on it from that standpoint. And they've also said that folks who are growing or commercializing marijuana are not allowed to use federal water sources. So they are putting some restrictions on this.
This is Tim. If I could just have another chance to respond to that. Clearly this is a rapidly changing area. And I just wanted to note that Representative Don Young has introduced legislation that would essentially take the federal government out of enforcing this in states where there are laws legalizing it. And we'd like to thank
Major Casanovas from the Department of Public Safety, state troopers, how do you view this when the state allows something and the feds don't? And I know that you can certainly arrest people under federal laws, if I'm not mistaken. How does this all work?
Lieutenant Governor, I think to try to succinctly answer this is that in regards to Alaska State Troopers and state and city police officers, their primary focus is on enforcing state and city laws and borough laws and those sorts of things. The federal government U.S. Attorney's Office provided some guidance to all their U.S. Attorney's Offices and federal law enforcement agencies in August of 2013, and they tried to identify what their role was going to be in these states that did, in fact, pass the legalization of marijuana. And those 8 points they outlined were preventing the distribution of marijuana to minors, preventing revenue from the sale of marijuana from going to criminal enterprises, gangs, and cartels, to prevent the diversion of marijuana from states where it is legal under state law in some form to other states, preventing state-authorized marijuana activity from being used as a cover or a pretext for the trafficking of other illegal drugs or other illegal activity. Number five, preventing violence and the use of firearms in the cultivation and distribution of marijuana. Preventing drugged driving and the exacerbation of other adverse public health consequences associated with marijuana use, preventing the growing of marijuana on public lands, and the attendant public safety and environmental dangers posed by marijuana production on public lands, and lastly, preventing marijuana possession or use on federal property. So that was the guidelines they gave their federal law enforcement officers and their prosecutors' offices as to what they would focus on in the states that allowed it to be legal. So I realize it's a very sort of complicated answer, but that's what the feds have said that they're going to do, and I think that the state law enforcement officers and the city law enforcement and borough law enforcement officers will continue to focus on state, city, and borough laws.
Major, before you give up the microphone, let me ask you, go to the next question that the mayor had asked about the Raven decision of 4 ounces versus 1 ounce, and then we'll go back to Tim and Christina and others who may be on the call. On the Raven decision, essentially what the court has said is that under the privacy shield of the Alaska Constitution, 4 ounces is an acceptable amount to hold. I don't know if that's per household or per individual. Could you have a pound if there's 4 adults in your household? And how do you enforce that now? And how would you look at the Raven decision guidelines that you that the troopers follow today versus a law that says only 1 ounce can be in possession
if this law passes?
Yes, the Raven decision in essence says that an adult in the privacy of their own home could possess up to 4 ounces and not have criminal culpability. Now, again, that is not taking into consideration whether or not the person might have applied for and have a medical marijuana card, and it doesn't affect some other sort of details. But how would law enforcement then treat it if this were to pass? I believe that the interpretation may be by the Department of Law that this initiative, when passed, doesn't affect the current Supreme Court ruling on Raven. And so we would still have that variance, one based on a Supreme Court ruling and the other based on this new initiative if it passed.
Okay, Tim and Christina, do you have any question?
Again, I just want to remind everybody that it says in the initiative language that nothing in this initiative would affect the Raven decision and its interpretation. I think I would agree that the most straightforward way to apply it would be to say that 4 ounces in the home is the limit, but for sale and transport, it would be 1 ounce as specified in the initiative.
So you could have 4 ounces in your interpretation is that you could have 4 ounces at home, but no more than an ounce at a time purchased. Is that correct?
That's right.
So if there's one dispensary in a community, a person could only buy 1 ounce a day, but if there are four dispensaries in a community, you could buy 4 ounces a day, or could you come back to the same dispensary four times in a day, or go consume an ounce and then replenish? How does that work?
I'm sorry, is that question directed to me?
Yeah.
Again, I can only go by what it says in the initiative, which is that purchases can be in the amount of 1 ounce. And how that was applied remains to be determined, and perhaps regulations are needed for that.
Okay, and just for the record, is there any intent? Is it the intent that the person never buy more than 1 ounce in a particular period of time, or just 1 ounce in any instance?
As written, and the intent is that it would be 1 ounce in any instance.
In any instance, okay. Mayor, does that answer your question on that? Christina, do you have any comment there?
I do. I think it just points to the fact that this really does have a significant impact on our rural communities. We know the challenges we have with substances in our rural communities, and we know that many of our communities have tried to keep harmful substances out. And this just means further that we really have no rural option in our communities to keep this out, as many communities have tried to do.
Okay, well, that brings us actually to the mayor's third question, but Mayor, before we go to your third question, on your second one, is there any follow-up you want to make?
There's just the issue of medical marijuana and a medical marijuana card. I think it'd be it needs to be addressed in those regulations more clearly when they're promulgated. It answers my questions.
Okay, we have a representative from the Department of Health and Human Services online. Could I ask that representative to identify herself and talk about what does the law allow now on medical marijuana in terms of possession?
Hello, Lieutenant Governor. This is Diane Casto with the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm within the Division of Behavioral Health. The issue of medical marijuana is part of our Division of Public Health. That is where you can apply for and receive your medical marijuana card. I believe we currently have between 1,600 and 1,800 people with a medical marijuana approved card. As the mayor points out, this is an issue that definitely needs some addressing, regardless of whether the initiative passes or not. We have the ability to for someone to become eligible to have medical marijuana and to be able to have the card to allow them to possess it. But what we do not have is an appropriate way for people to obtain medical marijuana. And so that is an issue that, as the mayor points out, definitely needs to be addressed in the new regulations and will also need to be addressed, even if the initiative does not pass, because we do recognize that this has been an issue that has been needing some attention for a while. So currently the amount of that you can still, similar to the Raven decision, you can still possess some. I don't have the medical marijuana law right in front of me. I apologize for that. But you can have a certain amount, plus you can grow your own in your home, I believe, four to six plants. So once we know which way this initiative is going, like I said, either way, we will be looking at the medical marijuana regulations and hopefully improving those and learning from some of the other states who have medical marijuana that they have developed some solid regulations around access and within good regulations of that as well.
Okay. Thank you. The third question that the mayor had asked has to do with the local option. Can a community ban sale, distribution, but not possession or use? And tied to that, can the city restrict a dispensary, for example, to be part of a city-owned distribution center like it does now for alcohol, or perhaps, restrict it so that any sale goes through a city-owned liquor store, which happens in several communities around the state, as I understand it.
Good.
I'm going to ask first Tim to get your impression on this, and then Christina, and then we'll talk to people in commerce and community economic development.
Okay. So, right, as plainly stated in the initiative and as we've been discussing, the Raven decision protects the personal possession up to 4 ounces. Nothing can change that. Nothing that we could have tried to put into the initiative could change that and still be constitutional. The city of Barrow or any municipality could prevent the production, sale, and distribution of marijuana under this initiative. I suppose too that they could establish a city-owned dispensary. I don't see why that would not be allowable under the initiative as well. And again, just to respond to something that the opposition said a few minutes ago. So, no, there's no reason to say that local option doesn't exist. There would be a strong local option protection under the initiative, and anybody who says otherwise is misleading you.
Okay, so just there, in the law that sets up a dispensary, you talk about purpose of marijuana sold by regulated businesses. You talk about restrictions on personal cultivation. You talk about lawful operation of marijuana related facilities. I'm just wondering if on the issue of state ownership versus, could I, as an entrepreneur, for example, to say it's clearly my right to distribute in Barrow, even if the city wants a monopoly? Do you see any protection for the city through its local option requirement or not? And I'm going to ask DCED here, Christina, we'll see you in a moment, but how do we do that now? If the city decides for itself that it wants to own the liquor store and not allow anybody else to do that, you're in essence maybe telling others who would sell liquor that they can't do it, like the AC company. Do you see any appropriate language here that, that allows this or doesn't allow this? And I just want to see tease that out for a moment.
Okay. I'm not sure I'm completely understanding the question, but again, I don't see why a municipality, any local government could not regulate it, could not limit sales to a government own, you know, a government agency or a local government if they wanted to have a monopoly. What part of the question seemed to be, could an individual challenge that restriction? And I suppose they could in court, but there's no reason to think that they would prevail. There was a recent case in Washington State where a court upheld a city that didn't allow sale in the city, and in fact, in Washington, there is no provision of the initiative for that. So in our case, I think the court would be even stronger ground saying that upholding this provision.
From DCED and
this is Michaela Fowler for Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And that would be something that would be defined in the ballot initiative that would be in the municipality utilizing their local option. So currently, to let you know what the way it works for alcohol, section 04-11-491 is the local option section of our statutes for alcohol distribution. And section 4 is where, section 3 of that, the sale of alcoholic beverages except on premises operated by the municipality and under a type of licensed premise listed on the ballot may include one or more of the following, and it sort of lists that out. So there really is flexibility there within how the ballot initiative is written.
Okay. Thank you. Christina, do you want to comment on any of this?
Sure. And if I could, I'd like to talk about a couple of things that we talked about, medical marijuana. I'll talk about that in just a second. But first of all, so the Alaska Conference of Mayors opposed Ballot Measure 2 because they would have to fund the efforts to develop and implement local controls. This requires staff, expertise, and money that most communities don't have. Those are the issues that are really the driving factors that push the Conference of Mayors to oppose the initiative. They will have to address this in a funding mechanism one way or the other. They will not have an option because it will change things in their villages, and that is why. Local control comes with an economic cost, costs that taxpayers will have to absorb, and clearly the tax revenue that Alaska, in a generous estimation by our side, would not cover the cost to the state of Alaska, potentially up to $7 million. And certainly the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police has said that it will cost them roughly $6 million for training and implementation. And so those are considerable costs. And so the local control, I think that the challenges that they're seeing in Colorado with, an increase in crime up 6.7%, the increased use, the increase in healthcare costs, all of this comes at a significant cost to the communities, and they would not be able to opt out from having to develop and implement local controls. The second thing is medical marijuana, and we believe that there needs to be a conversation and something to address decriminalization and medical marijuana in Alaska. But that's not what this ballot measure is about. It is written by, it is funded by an organization outside of Alaska looking to bring a retail industry to Alaska. And so I think that when we have a conversation about, I'm pleased to hear that, the state, when this doesn't pass, that the state will have to address this because this is something that we do have. And we encourage that conversation among Alaskans to come up with a solution that really fits Alaska and isn't an outside framework for us. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll get to you in just a moment. The last question that the mayor had asked is, would there be public input into the regulations and concern about derivatives, concentrates, products perceived? And I can assure you, because I oversee the end process on regulations, yes, through the Administrative Procedures Act, that's covered, and the ABC board is covered under the administrative. Actually, I'm not sure if they're exempt under the act, but they have their own public process there, so I'm sure that there will be plenty of public process there, including what the Department of Commerce has recommended. In the question about derivatives, this was an issue that Christina brought up in her presentation. Tim, I didn't really hear an answer from you, and maybe I should just phrase the question this way. Is an ounce of marijuana kind of the green leafy substance that used to run around my college campus in a baggie, in a bag, and I have not been around anybody knowingly who's been buying it or selling it lately, but I probably have, but I just haven't seen it. Versus the picture that we saw on the slideshow of earwax and hash oil capsules and that sort of thing, is an ounce of cash oil capsules that's much more potent than, say, that bag, is 1 ounce of hash oil capsules the same as 1 ounce of green leafy substance that has not been concentrated or not?
The intent of the initiative was to legalize sale of 1 ounce of green leafy substance. If the legislature saw fit to restrict the concentration or amount sold in higher concentration forms, the initiative sponsors would have no problem with that.
So we could be a near beer state. Okay, so your idea of the green leafy substance or the sticky buds is that, and let me just ask you today, Major Casanovas, when you come upon a person who has illegal drugs outside his home, and one may be a bag of a green leafy substance or buds, and the other is a concentration of hash oil, how do you score it in terms of the crime, as it were, today?
Lieutenant Governor, the definition of marijuana currently in the statutes is, in essence, that green vegetable material that you speak of. That is what is referred to as a Schedule 6A controlled substance. However, the resin, the oils, the products, the concentrated versions that might come from marijuana are currently classified in Alaska statute under a Schedule 3A, a much more seriously scheduled drug than marijuana. So there is a distinct difference today when law enforcement encounters the hash oil, the butane oil, versus the green vegetable material.
So does this law modify that law, or does that law would still be in effect if this initiative passes?
You've identified one of what I think may be several alterations, conflicts with current law, that the regulation process by DCCED and the Department of Law and perhaps the legislature will have to take into consideration if this initiative passes.
Well, but on the face of it, if what we're saying here in the initiative is that marijuana is all parts of the plant, et cetera, the resin extracted from any part of the plant, and every compound manufacturer, salt, derivative, mixture, or preparation of the plant, its seeds or its resin, including marijuana concentrate. So in essence, this law makes 1 ounce of that done, but it doesn't do it by repealing the other law that's in place. So maybe, Tim, the first question for you is, did you consider repealing those other laws in place on the schedule that the Trooper Major Casanovas mentioned, or did you? How do you intend that to fly? and I say this not in an adverse way to you. An initiative is a de novo piece of legislation, but you addressed the Raven conflict in your legislation. You did not appear to address this conflict, or did you?
This conflict is not explicitly addressed in the initiative language. So, I'm sorry, I'm not sure exactly what I'm answering here. Do I recognize that there may be conflict between the existing statute and the initiative language? Yeah, I think that's clear. I think the previous speaker was correct in saying that that's something that would need to be addressed by the legislature and by enforcement agencies.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor, did we cover your questions?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Can I respond to that, Lieutenant Governor?
Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Christina.
Thank you. So the ballot measure that was written was a collaboration of those that wrote the ballot measure and funded the ballot measure in Colorado and in Washington. And this ballot measure expressly protects, because it is included in there, all forms of marijuana, every compound, manufacture, derivative, including concentrates. It also expressly includes in writing marijuana products, including those that are comprised of marijuana and other ingredients, and edible products. And this is the most extreme version of legalization ballot measure language that is out there, and it is expressly backed by a commercialized industry. And these products, you saw them in their packaging, are what are being sold in stores. And the industry wants to sell these. And there was no reference to what an ounce of a concentrate is or green leafy substances. And the fact is that, you know, an ounce of concentrate is expressly protected in here under the definition of marijuana and the value and the measurements of. And so we believe that because this is a commercial industry, that their intent is that an ounce of concentrate or edible or anything else is the same measurement as an ounce of green leafy product. The other thing is the advertising. And I guess I should say Colorado, they haven't been able to protect any or to limit the sale of any of these products, whether it's concentrates, whether it's edibles, and their ballot measure language was much less inclusive than Alaska's. The other thing is this is considered legislation, and regulation can only regulate up to the language included in a piece of legislation. And so we will not be able to regulate beyond what is in there. And what is in the ballot measure protects these products. What we've seen in Colorado is that advertising is in full force. And why do we assume that anything would be any different in Alaska than it is in Colorado and it is in Washington? And the legal ramifications of being sued by this big industry is what Alaska could foresee if we tried to change anything in the ballot measure.
This is Tim Hindenburg again. I have to respond. This initiative is not being pushed by any sort of industry in Alaska. The Marijuana Policy Project is a nonprofit organization. All of this involved myself and the rest of the volunteers do not stand to make any money off it. More generally, I don't want to get into an argument with Christina over every issue, but if she's permitted to go off on a long-winded rant rather than responding to specific questions, that's what it'll turn into.
Okay. Jim, I'll try to moderate if I hear any long-winded rants. The next person who's asked to testify is Duke Nornu.
Good afternoon. My name is Duke Morrell. I'm a pastor here in Barrow. One of the things I have not heard was from the state government's analysis of the costs, but no analysis from them of the income. That would be number one. The only analysis of the income was put out by Christina on the opposition side. But the second question I have is, and this is, I don't believe a study's ever been done, but clearly in Barrow, we have a real problem with things like domestic violence and alcohol use. They're invariably tied together. What we don't have is a domestic violence problem with marijuana use, okay? And has anybody ever actually looked at the human costs in regards to that differential? That's my questions. Anybody wants to take them?
Thank you, Pastor. The first question on revenue, I'm going to ask the Department of Revenue to answer the question on revenue estimates. I will say, as Lieutenant Governor, when I compile the revenue estimates, or when I require, when we compile the cost estimates, we have tried to refrain from speculation. We had all sorts of possible data that talked about how much marijuana is used today, how much is looked at in the other communities. We saw high numbers of $60 million estimated in Colorado, but different per capita uses and so forth. So we decided to refrain from that in the official estimate. I don't know if the Department of Revenue has got any more they'd like to add to that question, but let's address that one before we get into the human health and behavioral health issues that you also asked about.
So as far as, is this a question regarding the revenue or the costs?
It's regarding the potential revenue.
So the potential revenue, there was actually an article in the ADN this morning about that, that the state has been asked by some different reporters to put together a revenue forecast, which we've been unable to do. We just simply don't have the numbers. The article this morning basically said you would need to know the amount of how many ounces per capita we were going to be purchasing in a year that the state would be consuming, and you would times that by $50 an ounce, and that would be your answer. But we simply don't have the information on what the consumption would be. As you stated, Colorado did an estimate, and theirs was significantly under what they'd anticipated they would collect, so we simply don't have that information.
Could you identify yourself for the record here?
Yes, for the record, it's Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director for the Department of Revenue Tax Division.
Okay. And on this issue, is there anyone else who'd like to comment on the pro side, the con side, or any of the other state agencies? Hearing none. Why don't we go to your next question, which has to do with the potential effect and relationship between domestic violence and alcohol versus the relationship between domestic violence and marijuana. And I guess the first person I'd like to call on is the person who's on the race on the phone related to public health, Department of Health, and go from there.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor. This is Diane Castro again. I do not have and have not seen any specific research or articles related to the impact of marijuana use on domestic violence per se. We certainly have a number of evaluations and research and opinions about these issues that range across the board. So I think what we can say at this point is that there really isn't enough data that has been collected to give us that good information. And I think one of the reasons is that, unlike alcohol, that is easy when someone goes to a domestic violence call or an assault call or DUI call, that it's easier to document fairly quickly that the person has been drinking and then be able to do a breathalyzer and conduct and figure out how much alcohol the person has been drinking. It is not that easy to be able to determine the amount of marijuana in a person's system, and perhaps public safety could address that. But one of the things that we do know is that And it has been brought up on both sides, is that there are some differences between how marijuana impacts a person as opposed to alcohol. And I'm certainly not going to defend either one. They both have some detrimental effects. The reason we use alcohol and we use marijuana is to get some kind of an alternate feeling high, you know, something to change our current behavior and our current feeling. So they all impact our abilities. I think just like alcohol, marijuana also affects different people in different ways. And so that's another piece of the puzzle, so to speak, that we don't have all the answers. One of the things that has been coming out pretty clearly in recent months is the relationship of using alcohol and marijuana together, which some of the initial reports that I've been reading indicates that that combination creates a more serious condition than either one alone. So, but again, I don't believe there's enough strong evidence either way to tell us what we can expect down the road. I think that will be coming the more this issue goes forward and people begin looking at these issues a little more seriously.
Thank you. And I guess what the invitation I'd extend now is that if there's anyone who's got any studies on the issue of domestic violence and marijuana use that you'd like us to that you'd like to present as supplemental to this hearing, we'd be happy to include them in the hearing record. And I say that to the proponents, the opponents, and the state agencies or anyone else, we'd be very happy to do that. Pastor, thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else here in Barrow who would like to testify or ask questions? I know you had your hand up before. And,
yes.
Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Janelle Leverett, for the record. The mayor's question regarding the startup cost and what the cost would be, I think it was Christina who answered that question, and she was giving some figures, and I was hoping that she could give those again.
Sure. Actually, what I'm going to tell you is that there is a cost estimate, which is on the back table, which was prepared at length by the governor's Division of Management and Budget for me as lieutenant governor, which I had to include in the packet that was used when the proponents went out and got 45,000 signatures, and Cameron's going to give you a copy. When we do cost estimates, and we do them, we have right now three initiatives on the ballot, two out there pending to be on the ballot, several that we've done the cost estimate, but somehow, you know, didn't make it to the ballot. When we do that, we usually ask state agencies for themselves, what is the incremental cost to the state agency? We described that in a slideshow that I had earlier in the hearing, and included costs by our department, the Division of Elections, Public Safety, Health and Human Services, and some of those are on the screen right now, Environmental Conservation, which oversees food. What we did not include was the estimate of revenue, and there are lots of numbers flying on around about revenue, and of course that depends really on two things. One, how much Alaskans use, and two, whether or not the current black market in or illegal market in marijuana, you know, loses market share to the legalized market or not. I just read the newspaper article that was cited by the revenue department official online. The reporter didn't ask me, they asked the governor, and the governor, it's not a governor's policy per se, it's a Department of Law policy that's been there throughout several governors, is to not include speculative numbers in our cost estimate. So that's the way we've done that.
My question is, the mayor asked, would there be startup costs for each individual community?
Yes.
And what those costs would be.
Okay.
And that's what, and I think that's where Christina came on and
right.
She provided some information.
Yeah, and Christina in the last hearing also came up with, we had a representative in the last hearing from the Alaska Association of Police Chiefs who came forward with an estimated number that's on the hearing record from the hearing that we did in Nome. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. but the kinds of expenses that a local government might be expected to have with this might include training police forces, training, you know, acquiring police dogs that no longer sniff for marijuana or do, but, you know, or, I mean, there was a an assertion made that if marijuana is legal, then the dog, you can't unteach a dog to sniff for marijuana when it's sniffing for other drugs. There was a suggestion that certain police training would be needed around the state and so forth. And there was a number, there were some numbers presented at the hearings. I don't have them right here in front of me. And I don't know if that person, Christina or Tim, did you have anything you wanted to add there, or DCCED?
I don't have anything particular to add, no. Thanks.
Lieutenant Governor, there's a couple of things that I will be sure to get to Cameron for the record, and that is the compilation of concerns by the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, their statement about should this become legal in Alaska and what it would cost them. And if you'll just take the woman's name and email address, perhaps Cameron can forward some of those on to her. But what the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police have said, because of the training that would needed to be increased and improved, it would be about $6 million for them annually. And there's another report that I'll submit for the record. It's the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, the impact. It's called the Rocky Mountain High Impact Drug Trafficking Area. It's a report that was initiated by the White House, and so it looks at a lot of the revenue numbers when you're asking about revenue questions, some of the things that they were able to deduce, because Colorado legalized medical marijuana in 2006 and opened up medical marijuana dispensaries in 2009, so they have you know, 4 years of sales and numbers before they legalized recreational marijuana with their ballot measure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have at least, Janelle, I guess that was you. Forrest Ullman, would you like to testify?
Sure.
Please come up and introduce yourself. And then we have a couple of folks online who've been patient, and Lloyd Levitt would be next.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. For the record, my name is Forrest Ullman, resident of Barrow, lifelong Alaskan. Former user of marijuana over 20 plus years ago. And, you know, given what I've read and heard about the kind of marijuana that exists today is more potent than, I don't know, if you're going to regulate it like you do alcohol, you got 40 proof, 60 proof, 80 proof, whatever. Nonetheless, the concerns and questions that I may have that arise from this is that once the referendum is voted upon, the initiative is voted upon by the voters, and if it were successful, would the law that is enacted to make marijuana legal in Alaska, but could be subject to local option? That's one of my questions. And reason why I raised the question is because over time, our entities have put in place systems to have a drug and alcohol work-free or drug-free workplace. And so, and all the things associated with that, drug testing, remediation as far as rehab, and just all these enormous costs associated with drug abuse. And so when I look at the hundreds of millions of dollars that are generated from, I guess, the two strongest drugs that are legally sold in Alaska, alcohol and tobacco, a drop in a bucket of the profits made from those sales are used to educate and rehabilitate folks that don't want to indulge in alcohol drinking or tobacco use. And so it would concern me to the degree that, you know, these $650,000 to $800,000, it seems like a drop in the bucket. But the social ills that are accumulated because of these things that, you know, and it's often said that how many calls do you get for, how many domestic violence calls do you get to a party versus an alcohol party? You know, those are kind of unfair things to look at. And I think that in order for Alaskans to make a educated, informed decision as to how one should vote, there should have been a rollout of these things that are being asked now. I guess that's why my question would be to local option. Until we get more pertinent data to prevent us from going over the cliff, I guess is a good way to put it. But I just have some serious concerns that although this may seem like, and I've heard and read the stories about Colorado, you know, it's the next best thing to the powder puff snow that they ski on. They're making big bucks. But that's not always good because it's the social aspect that I'm concerned about, that all those costs associated with trying to keep a safe, healthy environment for our people, most likely that bill will be put on the local municipalities that are struggling already. So I'd like to get some clarification, some answers to those issues. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. I'm going to take your questions on local option and local costs two ways, just very simply. It was stated, it may have been before you got here, Forrest, that the Raven decision preserves your individual right to have up to 4 ounces in your home. And so that there is no similar Raven decision that allows you to have alcohol in your home. And the local option does allow them to have a community that's totally dry. But there's not the option to have a totally dry community in terms of marijuana possession. There is the option, at least that's been what's been asserted by the sponsor here in the last two hearings, and we haven't had independent legal analysis on that, but that's the assumption that you have there. The hearing on the question of support for communities on drug abuse and drug dependence, I'm going to turn to the Department of Health and Social Services again and ask, I guess it's to see if you'd like to comment on the grant programs we have today for municipalities and what else may be needed, or did you consider anything else that may be needed if this law were to pass?
Thank you very much. This is Diane Casto again from the Department of Health and Social Services. I really appreciate the thoughtful dialogue and questions that the gentleman presented, because I would say this, that his comments are kind of a summation of how most of us in DHSS feel, is that there's so many unknowns. You know, we at the Division of Behavioral Health work very hard to limit the consequences of the two legal drugs that were mentioned, tobacco and alcohol, both the health and, DBH and Division of Public Health. We both work on and have grant money going out to communities to help reduce, mitigate the unhealthy consequences of alcohol and drugs, of all drugs, including marijuana at this time, and tobacco. And while we work very hard at this, we work with our communities, we put a lot of communities for prevention and treatment activities, it is not an issue that's going away any time in the near future. Our state does have a propensity to enjoy alcohol. It's the number one drug of choice, as are a number of other drugs. Marijuana is quite high as well. Tobacco, while it's going down, still is used quite regularly by a number of people. So, you know, the way we have looked at this, especially from a cost estimate and kind of what next steps, is much like the other comments that have been made, we really don't have enough to go on yet to know exactly what we will do. But I will tell you, in my section, I work in prevention of substance abuse and other behavioral health conditions. So we are already working on gathering prevention materials, making sure our communities are aware of those. We have our communities doing assessments, looking at the data to see which of the alcohol and drug situations are most prevalent in their community, so they can really target their prevention and treatment strategies to the right condition, the right drug. So we are looking at that. We're pulling materials together. We're keeping our communities informed. We're working with them. But I will also say one concern that we do have, and it's been brought up by the opposition, is that we do have clear data that says that when the perception of harm, both for adults and for youth, when the perception of harm of a drug or a condition reduces, when they don't see it as harmful, the use of that drug increases. And I think that will tell us that we will see an increase in the use of marijuana by people who maybe in when it was illegal did not perceive it to be as dangerous, and or perceived it to be more dangerous when it was legal, and that as you legalize, as you start talking about it as a drug, the perception of harm, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the perception of harm does decrease, and data does tell us that as perception of harm decreases, the use increases. And currently in the state of Alaska, through our youth risk behavior survey data, I can tell you that perception of harm among the top three drugs used by youth, tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana, already marijuana is perceived as the least harmful, and the rates have been showing some increase in accordance with that. So those would be our concerns, and that's what we're looking to start doing some planning around regarding this possible initiative passing.
Thank you. Does that answer your question for us?
It clarifies it a little more. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. But it goes back to my point that if we're looking to make, just like alcohol and tobacco, you know, they're making a killing, literally, on sales of alcohol and tobacco, but very little of those profits are put back into communities that are impacted by their abuse. And just like the lady indicated, that if the perception of harm decreases, as you know, if you make it legal, the perception of harm will certainly decrease, and so the use will increase than by the abuse. And so, but at the end of the day, the cost of remediating the social impact, the social issues of those issues, more than likely will fall on the communities that are already impacted already. So I just feel that, you know, if a referendum like this were to be put before the voters, that their legislatures certainly understand that whether it be 80, 20, 90, 10, you know, 90 to go back to the communities that are impacted by the legalization of these types of things, rather than the good citizens of each community using its resources for unhealthy remediation versus healthy alternative impact. Those are my concerns, and I think a lot of thought and discussion needs to go into those things as, you know, the day draws near to decide whether or not to vote for or against this initiative. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. And toward that end, you had come in slightly after the presentation by Christina Woolston, and there was one slide on health issues. Tim has had a number of slides on health issues comparing pot to alcohol, comparing marijuana to alcohol. But there's this slide here that talks about brain structure changes for marijuana and so forth. And I guess what I'm going to say to those listening online is that this slideshow, both slideshows, will be up on our website soon. I would invite both the pro and the con sides to bring experts on health to the table for one of these hearings on the record if you'd like to do that. I've got a number of questions that I don't think I could get good answers for today on how much potency is safe, what's a safe level for driving, what's a safe amount to be used before you have conditions in the liver or conditions in the brain. And I don't know that either the pro side or the con side have that, or the health department has that, but toward the answer to the questions that you've raised, we'll invite witnesses to provide more information on those questions. If there's anybody who'd like to speak to any of those health issues right now who's on the line, specific health effects of regular use of this drug, the floor is open, and then we need to go to, we have several others.
This is Tim, if I could speak. Regarding the health effects, yeah, we can try to get more information, more specific information to you about supporting our contention, which I think there's really no dispute about, that marijuana is far safer, both for the individual and for society, than alcohol. We can get you more information on that if we need to. I would like to address the general assumption that everybody seems to have, that use rates, both adult and by underage individuals, will increase after the initiative passes. There's no reason to assume that that is true. If one looks at data from other places that have liberalized their marijuana laws, such as Netherlands, such as every state in the U.S. that has adopted medical marijuana policies, there is no evidence of increased use by youth following those policies. The speaker from the Department of Health and Human Services said that surveys show that Alaska youth already perceive that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol or tobacco. So I don't think there's any reason to expect that they will increase their use once state law, once the initiative passes and our laws come into alignment with that scientific reality. Thank you.
Okay. Here in Barrow, we've got one more witness. Christina, were you asking
I'm sorry. I'll be very, very brief. I apologize. Yes, I will be happy to submit medical expertise from the New England Journal of Medicine, Northwestern, and Harvard Medical Institutions around the effects of marijuana. And we agree, tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana are harmful. They are all. And the National Institute on Health did a study that showed that teens use more alcohol than marijuana because it's more accessible and because it's more prevalent, and that by treating it does not seem possible, and this is kind of verbatim, that treating marijuana as alcohol will result in less use by teens or that it will not go up. So we will be happy to provide those studies from very credible health and research institutes around that end. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last speaker at Barrow is Lloyd Levitt.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I was born and raised in Barrow. I've seen alcohol since I was a child. It's all has always been a problem. Alcohol is the biggest problem we have here in Barrow versus marijuana. People drink alcohol to relax. They don't relax. They go haywire. People go crazy. I remember a number of years ago, 98, 97, we banned alcohol from coming into Barrow. We had less than 200 ambulance calls. A year and a half later, we brought alcohol back right into Barrow. We had a record of over 1,000 calls, and to date, we still have a record of over 1,000 calls. Alcohol is a major problem up here. I have lived both worlds up here. I've been trying to balance the Western society, my way of life. At first, I couldn't outweigh the alcohol. I had to stop somewhere along the line. Marijuana is what really got me out of alcohol. I have been smoking it, God, the last, 30, 35 years, illegally. I am tired of fighting. Alcohol mellows people. Marijuana mellows people. Look at alcohol. Look at what alcohol does to our people. Brings out FAS, it brings out a lot of unhealthy issues versus marijuana. In my opinion, marijuana should be legalized. It is not as harmful as alcohol or tobacco. It is not. I should say, a living proof of who's been smoking it. It's good for my health. With the arthritis and the illnesses I have, I can't do anything. Believe me. I won't be able to walk straight. What helps me is marijuana. It medically helps people. That is why I am for legalizing marijuana within our great state of Alaska. And thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. On the line, we have Michael Williams and Akiak, who's been waiting patiently to testify. Michael, are you still on? And thank you for joining us.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm with the Akiak Native community, and along with me is the vice chief of our tribe, Moses Owen, and also tribal councilman James Nikolai. I just wanted to testify in opposition of this measure, because the concern that we have is for the impact that it will have on our young children's ability to think. And if it is available and more readily available, it's going to escalate the use. And if it is legalized, then it's a wrong message to our young people that they're going to be, it's okay to use this substance. We have had meetings with our elders, with our community leaders for the last past summer, And the conclusion is that, you know, not at this time that we do not want to see this measure go through, because there's a lot of financial unknowns. There's a lot of health unknowns that are not being answered to our to this proposal. And one big concern that our elders keep raising: who brought this over? And it has been those that brought it from the outside, not from within Alaska. And the questions that the majority of our elders, our Yupik-speaking elders, is, why are they bringing this? And you know, we have been looking at it all summer, and since this was being proposed, and a lot of the questions have not been answered, they said that you know, these things like alcohol has been brought into the state, and they've experienced it, and we've experienced it as Native people, and it has been destructive, and we feel that anything that is brought out from the outside, it's not good for us, and certainly alcohol, hard substances, and marijuana, they're all harmful to us. And there's no going around it that it's safer. There's anything safer than this. It's not. And I think that is one message that our elders wanted to give, is it is not safer, period. And we need to defeat this measure and not rush into this, because there's too many unanswered questions that the people had. Thank you. And I'll turn this over to Moses Owen. He wanted to make a few comments.
Thank you, Moses. Chief Owens, we're honored to have you as well.
Okay, thank you very much, for this opportunity, Lieutenant Governor, to speak our minds on this issue here. The one thing that we haven't seen out here, somebody along the line created a medical term or whatever it is with marijuana. I've yet to see some statistics there where marijuana healed any sickness or disease in anyone. And until that happens, I don't think our people will ever believe that and call it a medical medicine. So it hasn't healed anybody. It hasn't done any good for our people here. And some of the statistics here locally that we see that's generated from Department of Defense and Public Safety is, when you combine the two, you're creating a problem there. And when we legalize alcohol and marijuana here, it's going to have a devastating effect on our people here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. And your comments are now on the public record. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to pass them on to the state agency, their proponents or opponents here. The last person who signed up to testify is Tim Smith in Nome. Tim, welcome back. You were at our hearing in Nome the other day, and honored to hear you again. Tim may have had to leave the call. His comments are on the record. Are there any other comments or questions from people here in Barrow or anyone else online?
Lieutenant Governor, this is Michael Williams. I have been a counselor since 1975 out here with the mental health program, and I have seen a lot in those many years, over about 40 years. and I have seen the impact of alcohol. I have seen the impact of marijuana, and seeing the changes that our people are going through. And one of the reasons why I started advocating for sobriety is because our people did not use alcohol, our people did not use hard drugs, our people did not use marijuana, and I want to, our restoration efforts have been to revitalize our languages, cultures, and our good, healthy way of life, subsistence hunting, fishing, and gathering, and all of that good living that our ancestors had here. I think, adding all of these have really impacted our societies, and great deaths that have been documented from bringing in the disease and everything. But anyway, right now at this time, I feel that we don't need to rush into this terrible measure. Thank you.
Thank you. And Michael, I just want to say I followed you for many years, and I've always admired your work on sobriety, and I know many Alaskans who do as well. And thank you for joining us today. Not endorsing your position, because I'm not taking a position, but I will say that I've admired your work for a long time.
Lieutenant Governor, Tim Smith.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi. I had my phone on mute. I had a few things I wanted to say that I thought of since the last hearing here in Nome. I think it's been said previously, but marijuana prohibition hasn't worked any better than alcohol prohibition did in the 30s. The opposition that we've heard from today has trotted out a bunch of discredited legends, junk science, and antiquated scare tactics. There are no well-designed, controlled scientific studies showing the IQ decreases and central nervous system developmental defects caused by marijuana use that Ms. Wilson talks about. The emergency room admissions she talked about are any incident where marijuana was involved. That is not the same as saying that marijuana was the cause of the hospital visit, as was implied. Saying that a suicide and a murder in Colorado were caused by marijuana use is purely speculation. Alcohol users commit suicide and murder at very high rates, but we don't prohibit alcohol use. Aspirin causes 15.3 deaths per 100,000 users, but we don't prohibit aspirin use. Marijuana is much safer than many other substances that are legal today. The opposition presents a specter of a nebulous big industry from outside Alaska pushing this initiative as if having a legal regulated marketplace, similar to what we have with alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and pharmaceuticals, would be worse than what we have today. It would be worse than leaving it in the hands of the black market, criminal enterprises, organized crimes, and the international drug cartels the way we do it now. I don't believe that's true. Marijuana possession has been legal in Alaska since 1975, and that won't change regardless of what happens in November. But there is no legal way to obtain it. One of the primary benefits would be to provide a legal supply. My sister-in-law nearly died of stomach cancer. She was starving to death. She probably would have benefited from using marijuana, but she wasn't willing to go to the black market, and so she didn't use it. She barely survived, but I don't understand why she was deprived of something that might have helped and certainly couldn't have hurt. This measure is not about medical marijuana, but it would provide a legal supply for use by medical marijuana patients. I don't understand how anybody can be so callous and so dogmatic as to deny the benefits of this plant to dying people. It is not about raising revenue either, but the opposition has not been honest about the potential revenue benefits of legalization. If you look at what's happened in Colorado and Washington, projecting such a small amount of tax revenue in Alaska is just not realistic. Marijuana is currently the illicit drug of choice in the rural villages. It is also the easiest prohibited substance to interdict. And so this has saddled many village residents who are having enough trouble getting by with criminal records. That's not good. This initiative is about freedom. In the 1975 Raven decision, the Supreme Court found that the state was not able to show a compelling public interest in prohibiting marijuana possession, and nothing has changed since then. The opposition thinks it should be able to impose its values on all Alaskans. The decision to use or not to use marijuana should be left to each person, as is clearly stated in the Articles of our Constitution, protecting the right to privacy. And that's my testimony.
Thank you very much, Tim. Pastor Morrow had one other comment to make, and then
I had a question too, Lieutenant Governor, if you don't mind.
Okay, restate your question, please.
I'd like to hear from somebody from the state, possibly DCCED. Is there any evidence that large industry is promoting marijuana legalization in Alaska? Have any outside business enterprises contacted your agency about doing business in Alaska?
Well, she's here representing a large agency and may not know everyone who's contacted the agency, but I'll ask her to answer directly.
This is Michaela Fowler, Department of Commerce, and not to my knowledge, but, you know, there has not been a lot of inquiries coming in at this point on from any companies or prospective companies.
Thank you.
One question that came up after our hearing in Nome was whether or not the state agricultural bank would legally loan to this program. The deputy commissioner told me they had not considered that issue at all, but had not been contacted by anyone who wanted to. There may be some loans going on now to people who sell hydroponic equipment to people who are probably cultivating marijuana.
I want to know too.
No, so the question there is with the state. I have Pastor Morrow next for a comment, and then one other person who's. Would you like to testify, ma'am?
Oh, no.
Did you have a question? Are you saying you would like a loan also?
Yeah.
Okay.
My understanding is that if this ballot measure fails, everything stays the same, exactly as we are now. And the situation we have in here, even though marijuana is prohibited from sale and distribution, it's sold, it's distributed. It's common. I can go anywhere in Barrow within 10 minutes on foot and come back with a bag of marijuana. We're not keeping it out. We're not regulating it. We're not protecting our kids. But underlying this whole thing is we're trying to prohibit something that the public wants. Historically, that has never worked. And I guess the question I have is, why would we be so arrogant to think we can actually do this now and make it work?
Thank you.
You're welcome
for your comments. Are there any other comments to come before the hearing? Before we adjourn, let me just say that our next hearing is scheduled in Juneau on Tuesday. It's on Monday at noon. The hearing will also be available on the online as this one is, with the same numbers. If you would like to look at a recording of listen to a recording of this hearing or a recording of the previous hearings we've had on this or other ballot measures, you can go to notice.alaska.gov, and right at the top is a little banner that you can click on. It will take you to the hearings for all three pending ballot initiatives right now, and we'll try to add the documents to those websites as fast as we can. And then to the state agency folks who are on, I did mention an interest in maybe getting a little bit more related to health issues. Major Casanovas, I'm not going to ask for an answer today, but I would like to leave with a question on the table, which simply says, what capabilities do you have now in police cars, in trooper cars, to know if a person is under the influence of of marijuana while driving. What do you have to do to figure that? And is there something, has there been testing done to figure out what is a safe level for driving? Because I guess my understanding is this stays in your bloodstream long enough to disqualify you for a job if you, you know, if you've used it lately. But you may be what all of us would call functionally sober. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how would this affect the law enforcement in that way? And perhaps we'll have a chance to hear from you on Tuesday or on Monday, rather, more extensively on that issue.
Understood.
Thank you all very much. And I, just before I adjourn, ma'am, would you like to say something? Please come up. Yeah. And tell us your name.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Dolly Patterson. Would we have to go out of town in regarding to getting a card?
Okay. Dolly Patterson has just asked, would you have to go out of town to get a card? Are you referring to a medical marijuana card?
Right.
Mayor, do you know the answer to that? Do you issue medical marijuana cards here?
No.
Okay.
Well, out of town.
Does anybody online want to answer that question?
Yeah. Lieutenant Governor, this is Diane Casto. The Division of Public Health through Vital Statistics are the ones who issue those cards. And so you can go on to the website for Public Health Vital Statistics. It will tell you what you need to provide to them, and that's how you would get your card. So if there's a I'm not that familiar with Barrow to know if there's a vital statistics office there, but if there's a public health center, there are ways you could get that through public health.
I can report the mayor's looking for a DMV person right now to reopen that office. At any rate, thank you all for being a part of today's hearing. We've heard Alaskans on both sides of this issue, and you are the decision makers on this. So I'd urge you all to vote. So thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.